about glory. She only wants to make sure that justice is done. And just like in the case of King David, did everything he can, even though the completion will be done by the by his son Solomon, and Solomon is going to be known as the builder of the Beis Hamikdash. So the same thing here. She, in our framework, in which in the Eishes style is written, is that she sets him up that he's able to complete his job completely, and he'll be well known because of his type of work is in the public, but her work is not in the public, and so she doesn't care. She doesn't care if he gets the glory, as long as she lives the life of Mishlei. The pasuk is really saying that she facilitates him to be successful. But to facilitate him to be successful, to facilitate that he should be successful, so she, it has to do a job which is not known, which you won't be known for. She won't know that she did this. And she makes cloaks to sell, and a belt she gives to the Canaanites. And the commentaries say, why it says a Canaan, it seems like they were peddlers in those days. So she gives the belt to the peddler to sell for her. I guess, you know, they used to, well, it seems like it's on consignment, right? Something like that. Okay? What? The question is, what is it saying about her? What is new about this idea? And then suddenly it's also out of it comes back to it's out of context. I mean, it's just a totally new subject. Okay, so Matt wants to say that she makes things for her family, and therefore she has certain skills that she learned from the home, and she uses those skills in other areas. In other words, person through life, because of certain practical reasons, they pick up on things, and if they have a certain skill, so that they should start thinking, they never know when there is another situation where they could use that same skill. She's creative. It doesn't. In other words, she'll recognize where there is a new situation that she could use that skill for another purpose. Okay, so she's creative insofar as her skills are concerned. Whatever skills she has, she could maneuver it in different situations, in more than one situation. In other words, that she gives it to a peddler is a nice distinction. She's not a peddler. She doesn't know the business of selling, on the streets. But she takes her ability, which she learned from the house, and she gives it in consignment to others that they should do the selling, and she'll do the making. So works out very well. So the thing, but she has a quality that she used for practicality, and then she uses it in other situations that she could be successful in. Verse 25, strength and glory she dresses, and she laughs to the last day. First of all, what's the strength and beauty? What is the strength and beauty? Well, glory. Other might be glory. It's not beauty. It's like glory. Glory. She's dressed, and that's one thing. Well, first of all, what is that strength and glory? And two, she laughs at the last day. What does that mean? And the question is, what's the connection between the two sides? What is the connection? Right, we're taking the second half of the verse. It says she laughs at the last day. Right, the last day could either be death, or it could be the results of what she did now. In other words, like this. There are results which, in other words, if it's death, so then we're saying that she accepts death and it doesn't bother her. She could live death in the face and it doesn't bother her. She's not afraid of death. Okay? We have to see what that quality is that brings about not a fear of death. That's if it's death. The other thing is that liyom acharon means that the consequences of her actions, in other words, she just looks at the wisdom, she knows she did everything right, then it's out of her hands. That's what it means, she laughs at the last days. You see? That's a good quality, that once I made a decision, and I don't see any, or until I see something wrong with it, I am totally secure that I did the correct decision. Now if something goes wrong, it's out of my hands. So in other words, she's not worried about results, you see? She's only worried that to make sure that what's in her hands, results are not, she recognizes, is not in her hands. What is in her hands is only to make correct decisions. You see? That is if Yom Acharon means consequences. If Yom Acharon means death, then what quality are we talking about in the Yeshus Fire? The question is why does it say laughter? And why doesn't it say she's not afraid? Okay? The answer to that is that not afraid means that it's missing the whatchamacallit, the negative. I don't have a negative emotion, right? That makes me, that hurts me, and bothers me, right? I don't have a negative. Tiskach means positive. I'm totally secure in my life that I can enjoy life with it. Even if death is coming or the results are coming, I am totally secure that I am living the good life and therefore I could be happy. Results are not in my hands. If something goes wrong, I could still be happy as long as it wasn't my fault. If it's my fault, then I have to repent, I have to do tshuva to see... to analyze what I did wrong and then to straighten it out. But if it's not my fault, then I could still laugh at life. There's the positive. I could still enjoy life. You understand? Based on that I am living the correct life. Based on living the correct life, that's all. I am totally content that I am who I am. It's a positive thing. You see? That's why it says laughter, and it doesn't say, doesn't fear. Death also is the same idea. It's the same idea is that I only live for, in other words, my responsibility is to make decisions. And therefore, what the results are is not in my hands. I'm totally content. You see? So it's the same idea whether we accept death or consequences, okay? Usually people live in a result-oriented way, and so therefore if the results, they only feel bad if the results don't come about, you see? That's the usual person. The Eishes Chayil recognizes reality that results are not in her hand, but she can do only that which is in, she can only relate to that which is in her hands, that she could do. So she's totally content with that my actions are totally in line with wisdom, with justice, with mercy, with kindness, with the correct ways of life. As long as her actions are in line with that, then she's totally content. Even though the results might not be perfect. That's out of her hands. Only thing is if she made a mistake, so then it's time for repentance. That's the second half of the verse. So that helps us with interpreting the first half. Strength and glory means that she's totally secure. The second half explains why she is secure within herself. You see? And Lagusha is, which is shown to the public. So the public notices, like, they sense that strength, even if she doesn't brag about it or should or actually show it, but it shows up in a personality and a lifestyle. They see that inner strength and inner security in her. They recognize that security in her. It says, her mouth opens with wisdom, and the Torah is the system of kindness is on her tongue. I want to say that when somebody speaks, it represents that which is on your mind. The Ralbach says that quite often, okay? And it shows, the way she speaks shows what's on her mind. You see? It shows that, in other words, there's certain people that have wisdom, but when they talk, many times you talk to them, there's certain ways, the way they express themselves, you see that there's something else beyond the wisdom. There's an emotion there that shows up. There's a certain different qualities that show up. By the Yeshus Chayil, the Yeshus Chayil is a person that there's nothing else that shows up in her speech except the wisdom and kindness. That's what you always see, which shows her that this is, there's nothing else but this. This is her system. This is the way she lives her life. This is her life. This is who she is. She's defined by wisdom and kindness, the way she thinks. That's the way she thinks. Because wisdom, kindness to us is a system. It's not just an act, it's a system. That's why he says, Torah Chesed, like a system of kindness. You see? Because she has that all in her, and it constantly shows up in, when she speaks. The question is, what's the difference between wisdom and kindness, okay? Kindness is where you evaluate the consequences of your actions. Okay, that's chachma, that's wisdom, okay? But kindness is where I do for others. It's the two systems within the book of Mishle that you have, both of them are important qualities in Mishle. Okay? The word Sophia means that she... the translator, the Targum, says that it's revealed before her eyes. In other words, she foresees the she's aware of the goings of a household, and the bread of laziness she does not eat. So the question is, first of all, we need clarification on the first half, and secondly, what does the first half have to do with the second half? Both have two different subjects. The second half, what does it mean, the bread of laziness she does not eat? What is it, the bread? What is that bread? We'll take the second half of the verse first. The question is, why say the bread of laziness? What is that bread of laziness? There are certain people live their life in a certain fantasy. Like, for instance, they buy lottery tickets, you see, and they rely on chance, gambling, you see. They rely on chance, you see. She does not rely on that. Everything is always made a decision. Everything is worked out with chachma, and everything is a decision. She does not rely on some chance that might happen. She makes a decision, or it's out of her hands, and therefore she can't do anything about it, period. But she, at that point, you know, she might turn to God. That's a separate thing. But the thing is that she does not rely on chance. There's a Ralbag that said about Avraham that when there was a famine, so he had a choice of staying in Canaan for the famine or to go down to Egypt where they were like Nazis, you know what I mean, where they could kill him for any little thing. So he says he didn't throw up his hands and say, I just give up. He made a decision. I mean, it must have been something like, well, here there's a 1% chance I'll live, there's a 2% chance I'll live, so therefore there's a better chance there, so I'll take that chance. But he made a decision, he worked it out. You see, he didn't throw up his hands, or at any time, that's in the one extreme. The other extreme, people just go out and buy lotteries, and they spend money on lotteries hoping for some chance to come through. You know what I mean? Like they're relying on some magical potion to come through or something. She does not work that way. She works everything with chachma. Is it chachma to buy a lottery ticket? No. It's 1 in 1 million, 1 in 10 million. That's not the good odds. That's where we're living a fantasy. You understand? You know what I mean? People, when they put the money on the lottery, in their mind, they're already spending their money.
and all the things they're going to have, that they're going to do with the money that they get. And they know how many get it. You understand? So the thing is that she doesn't want to live that way. That's the bread of laziness, I think. Okay. Bread means that I eat that which I got through chance. In other words, laziness means I didn't do it on my own. I got the bread, but not on my own. Like relying on others, relying on chance. You understand? Outside factors, but not on myself. This woman, the Yesh HaSchayil, is a person that every single step is worked out with Chachma. And that doesn't mean you shouldn't rely. Even when you should rely, it should be worked out by Chachma. But it's always a decision. It's always a decision. But atzlus means, laziness means that there's no decision. I just rely on others to do things. Okay, verse 27, the first half of the verse, okay? So it says that she's aware of the goings of her household. Goings are outside of the house, okay? Now, the thing is that where something is out of your hands and where it's in your hands is a strong borderline. You know what I mean? It's a very thin borderline. You know what I mean? Where you could, where in that situation, if there is any laziness, you could say, look, it is out of my hands. My children are out. I have to rely. You know what I mean? But she makes the decision even outside the house, you see, of where it's her responsibility and where it's not. And laziness does not, that's why it says, but laziness does not affect her at all. You understand? In other words, many times, sometimes a person is not lazy in general, but they still have a certain quality of laziness. We have to make a decision, the quality of laziness can sneak in. You see? You've got to be very, very careful. Certain places it's so obvious that you just make your decision. There's no such thing as laziness. You just do what's right. Sometimes it's a borderline, like where the kids are out of the house already. Now, where do you have to say, I have to pull back? They're on their own now. It's not my responsibility. And where is it that I'm aware of what's happening so that if there is a problem, I can make a decision? There's a certain, like we said, that Sophia means it's not that she sees, she's aware. She's aware of what they're doing so that if there is necessary to make a decision, in other words, she doesn't, it's a situation where if you have any amount of laziness, laziness can sneak in there. It's a situation, the way we said it the first way is that's a lazy person to make decisions based on results. They just give up. But here, I'm saying slightly different than we said at first, and that is that the laziness doesn't, it's the same idea of results. In other words, she relies on results, but it's a very subtle, the first half of the pasuk saying it's a very subtle type of situation where she is aware of what's happening, but yet when she should jump in and when she shouldn't jump in, that is dependent on Chachma. In that situation, if she has any trace of laziness, laziness will sneak in and say, that's not my business, I have to let it go. In other words, when it says she's aware of their goings, she's not totally involved because now they're on the outside world, she can't see them, she's not in total control. But however, there are certain decisions even then that could be made. But in that situation, there could be laziness. And laziness could sneak in. So therefore, she has no part of her that is lazy, so therefore laziness won't sneak in, even in that situation. The question was, how did I know that it means outside of the house? It says, because the household means, all along we've been translating, are the people of the house, right? And halichos is the goings, where they're goings, which seem to imply
outside of the house. And Sophia doesn't mean she sees, but the Targum, the translator, says that she's aware of what's happening. She's constantly aware. But so therefore, even though, and she's aware, and they're on their own, and there's a certain amount that's out of her control, a certain amount that could be in her control. So she's constantly aware to know where she is in control, where she should make decisions, and where she can't make decisions. I mean, that's not only in this situation, a lot of situations, there's sometimes a borderline case where you have to be very, very careful where you're going to allow, where you say, this is not in my hands, or it is in my hands. A person, and what the Shlomo was saying, whenever you have to make that decision, if you have any part of you that is still lazy, laziness will sneak in. Or I would even say, on the other hand, on the other extreme, if people have a sense of control, then she will go overboard in the sense of control to control more than she can, which is out of her hands. You know what I mean? See, a person has to know exactly what's in their hands and what's not in their hands, and they can't let either emotion affect them. I would say that the unconscious does. In other words, the question is what is the quality that she has? She has that her unconscious will not affect her decision making, even where it can show up on a borderline case. Plus, verse 28 says her sons stand up and praise her. Or Bonel could be her children. Her children get up and praise her, and her husband also praises her. It's two different terms for praise. Okay? One is Yashruha or Sher, and one is Yahalala Hala. Okay? Right. Now, the question is, that's very nice. I understand that her children and her husband praise her, because they get a lot out of her because of what she does for justice. But what quality does that show us about the Eishes Chayil? They want to say that the reason why her children praise her is because they learn from her different ideas about being an Eishes Chayil. Or her husband praises her for what she does for him. But that's all true, but I think since this whole thing is about the Eishes Chayil, I think, in other words, it shouldn't come from the aspect of the people that praise her, but the fact that they do praise her says something about her. And therefore, we have to understand what the quality is about her. Right, so Adam wants to say that when you praise somebody, there's a certain recognition. And there's different groups that praise different people. Okay, depending on which group you are, they praise different people because of certain recognition. So that is a good first step. In other words, what is this sense of recognition? It might not be defined, but it's a sense of recognition that a children and a husband have about her. Okay? So, so that's it. Well, the question is, what is that quality? I think we have to go to verse 29. 29 says, there are many daughters that do choyel. Okay. It says, many daughters do valiantly or courageously, and you are above all of them. So the question is, what is the difference between people that do valiantly and courageously, and she's above all of them? It could be, if we define that quality, it could be similar in verse 28, that that is the similar quality there. Okay? Right, Matt wants to make a distinction between where it says Eishes Chayil, a woman of valor, a woman of courage, meaning that's the person's nature. But over here it says they do valiantly. They do acts of valor, or they do acts of courage, right? but that is not their nature. Okay? So what is the difference? What type of acts of valor can you do and that's not part of your nature? How's it not part of your nature? But it's a good first step. Okay, good. In other words, we want to say that by the Aisha smile, it's part of a nature, and the other person is not part of their nature. Now, how could they do something that's not part of their nature? It must be part of their nature. So when you define the difference, in other words, we're saying valor must be an act based on wisdom. And not it's not valor or courage, according to King Solomon. Okay? So therefore, must be a person that does acts of courage or valor. Right? So that means she has courage or valor. Right? So what's the difference between her and the Aisha Sphile? Like what these daughters, these many daughters that do valor or courage, there seems to be two possibilities. Matt wants to say that it's a person that's a beginner in Mishlei. Beginner in Mishlei, so they have a certain amount of Chachmah, but it's not complete. And if it's not completed, it's not like the Aisha Sphile. That's possible. There is another possibility that there's certain people that by nature, they like an evenly keeled person will think correctly in certain areas, naturally. A person could think correctly naturally. It's not training, it's a natural, raw mind, and yet it sees things correctly. It sees ideas, it sees... Like, for instance, I'll give you a good example of who was like that. Mark Twain. Mark Twain, he's not a philosopher, he's not a... You know what I mean? He's a writer. But he saw human nature and understood human nature, like, from observation. Not by training of the mind. You see? So, the thing is, he has a natural, inherent view of life. He'll make many mistakes in life, which Mark Twain did. Certain areas he was to catastrophes. Emotions took over. He had terrible decisions. But yet he had insight into certain truths and reality that were unbelievable. So therefore there are many people that have that. I mean, it could either be your way that they had a certain amount of training for Mishlei, or it could be that inherently, naturally, they're good thinkers and they see things correctly, and they live by those ideas. But there's a big difference between those two and a person that has trained himself totally along with a whole book of Mishlei is the second nature, like we described this part, the Aisha Sphile. And once again, the other people, not the Aisha Sphile, is either naturally they have insight into things and they have insight in what's correct and how to live a life, or they had a certain amount of training from Mishlei, but they didn't go all the way. So it could be either one of those that they do acts of valor or courage. And by courage we mean that he lives by the mind and he makes decisions by the mind despite the fact that other people are that other people disagree. Up until now, we explained the difference between Aisha Sphile and not another person that thinks correctly, just the qualities that she has. This pasuk is distinguishing. There are other people that do it. There are other people you will see that make logical, rational decisions, but they're not the Aisha Sphile. She's above all of them. It says, Brayton, you are above all of them. You understand? That training, you can't beat that training where you think it through again and again until suddenly you start thinking that way. And the whole book becomes second nature, where you have all the qualities of what we went through here, what an Aisha Sphile is. Going back to verse 28... Matt asked the question, it should say everybody praises her because you could rely on her. I mean, she's reliable and she does justice. I mean, the poor and that she helps and everybody she helps should praise her. But here it only says her children and her husband. In other words, it's within the family.
So it's not just what, it seems to be not just what she does to them, but they actually receive a certain education, a certain qualities just by living with her that you must pick up by living with her. Let's say you're raised in the house of Moshe Feinstein. I mean, even if you don't learn, you're going to pick up ideas of the way he lives his life. You're going to sense a certain development that is beneficial just by virtue of the house that you raised in. So that is what Yaakov wants to say. Yaakov. So Matt asked the question, and Yaakov answered it. Okay. Matt asked the question of why does it only say the family? So it must be something particular about the family. The family receives more than physical objects or physical help. So therefore, Yaakov wants to say that it's quality that they learn from her, they gain from her personally, the way she lives her life. Even without her teaching them, they're going to pick it up from just her lifestyle. Once again, it must be something the family gets that nobody else gets. Okay? The only quality is what Yaakov is saying, I think. You understand? That they get from her, that they sense and pick up a certain lifestyle, even without training, just by osmosis, by being in the house. Right, so the question is, Matt is asking, where do you see praise here? In other words, what does the word praise add to all this? I mean, you could say that they develop from her. They develop somehow, or they learn from her somehow. They could put it somehow there. Why does it put it in the form of praise? Right, sometimes through areas of Mishle, it says praise about a certain person, that they deserve praise. So they must be some, now it doesn't mean that they get praise for, you know, by verbal praise. It means they have a certain quality that they should be praised. I mean, there's a lot of people that have these qualities and the world doesn't recognize it and they don't praise them. On the contrary, they put them down for, you know what I mean, based on different emotions. So the thing is that it is, in other words, that is the nature of the praise is the very existence of the family, the way they live their life, what they pick up from her lifestyle, and from her actions. So they pick up from her these qualities. That is a praise of the Eishes Chayil. That's praise of the Eishes Chayil's lifestyle. That is, in other words, it doesn't have to be a verbal praise, but it represents that this is a praise, in other words, their lifestyle, what they picked up, is praise to the Eishes Chayil. The way they live their life, what they picked up from her, that is praise to the Eishes Chayil. Once again, since their nature changed, so that change in nature represents a praise to the lifestyle of the Eishes Chayil, because in other words, because they picked up from her lifestyle, they changed. So that is praise of the Eishes Chayil. Their lifestyle is in fact a praise to the Eishes Chayil, even if they don't verbalize it. In other words, we're not praising the Eishes Chayil because you learn from her. All children pick up qualities from their parents, good and bad. You see? But what we're praising is that her qualities, which she gives over to her children, are beneficial to her children. Her children have a beneficial life, a better life. They have inherently, naturally, that which they picked up from her lifestyle. They picked up from her lifestyle. You see? So therefore, and they have a better life for it. I mean, let's say if a person trains their child to kill for money, okay? Well, I mean, they're going to learn it, or they'll pick up it in the house, but you wouldn't say that's praiseworthy.
In other words, the Pasuk is teaching us for those people that are in close proximity to her, they will gain from her lifestyle. They will benefit from her lifestyle, from all her work and studying. They will benefit too. And now it fits in very well how verse 29 comes next, because there's certain people that didn't work on it, but for some reason their nature is that way, like if they were raised by an Eishes Chayil. But since if they don't work on it themselves, then they are not an Eishes Chayil. But they will have good qualities, but not to the perfection of the Eishes Chayil. So it follows very well why verse 29 follows verse 28. Maybe we could learn Pasuk 28 slightly different, because we could translate the Ashruha as validate and Yehalala as praise. Okay? Validate is really that, in other words, the children validate, if Yashrua means validate, which it seems to mean that, then the children validate the Eishes Chayil because they pick up from her. Their living, the way they live, validates her. You see? But the husband who recognizes, he recognizes her, and so he praises her verbally. Because he recognizes. Okay? So, but it's still the same idea. Basically, it's the same idea. I mean, the question is, what is the gain? How is there a benefit by getting it from training and second nature? How is that better than if you get it just from natural? Maybe there's no difference. Well, okay, but we want to know, what is the difference between the two? Yaakov said that the difference is in consistency. The Eishes Chayil will consistently be guided by the world of ideas. Person that has it naturally will sometimes be guided by the, it depends on the situation. Certain situations they'll be guided by the ideas, certain situations they'll be guided by the emotions. The Eishes Chayil is always guided by the world of ideas. I'll try and explain it another way. A person that has no training, when they think naturally, they just think, you know, incorrectly, or sometimes they think correctly, sometimes they think incorrectly. You understand? But then when they train themselves, they start thinking correctly. But then the problem is that, in other words, the first way you're always guided by your emotions, and sometimes correct thought comes in. If you happen to be a natural, so correct thought will come in. The second way, naturally you think correctly, but every once in a while an emotion affects your thinking process. That's the difference. That's the Eishes Chayil. The Eishes Chayil is always guided consistently by the world of ideas. But in the world of ideas, there's sometimes a borderline case, and an emotion could push her over the edge, over one way, go too far, or the other way, without her realizing it. But the first way, they're guided by their emotions, they just allow it to happen naturally. So there's certain situations where the emotions take over, there's certain situations where the mind takes over. But they're guided basically by the emotions, and sometimes the mind takes over. The Eishes Chayil is guided totally by the system of thought, but every once in a while an emotion might affect the thinking process. Even if you're going to say the evenly keeled person in the Eishes Chayil. So the evenly keeled person will think, he'll think basically clearly in practical. He'll have a lot of practical, that he'll think practically, okay? But he'll make mistakes. Because he's lacking training, and two, we won't recognize when emotion he's affected by emotion, and emotions can work. Two, he'll have a certain sense of justice, and he'll have a certain sense of kindness, but it is not a result of formulating exact lines of demarcation, where it's my responsibility in justice, where it's my responsibility in kindness. It's just a certain sense. And since it's not well defined, so then the emotion could always sneak in. You see? I would say like this, to clarify. In other words, one person inherently thinks according to the world of ideas at all times. That's what they were trained for. It becomes second nature.
The other one, it depends on their situation. Let's take a businessman. Businessman will think out logically all areas of business. But it's not necessarily that he'll think through. He might have certain ideas about raising children, but he's not going to see the importance of putting the same amount of energy in raising his children as making money. So an evenly keeled person that desires to make money would put all his energy, he might think correctly in money, but not in all areas. It'll be a situational type of thing. You understand? Where, in other words, one is guided by the situation. Certain situations, they'll be evenly keeled and they'll think correctly. There's certain situations where they'll think correctly, but they're not going to put too much, they don't see the importance of it. They might not know the importance of something. They didn't think through the basic foundation of life, of what's important and what's not important. Why the Eishes Chayil analyzed the basic premise of every single thing, of every area of life, so she worked out clearly the basic foundation of everything. So she knows in every area she has to work that way. While the regular person, even though he's evenly keeled, it depends on the situation. I'll give you another example. There are certain people that are interested in one area of study. There are certain people that are interested in everything. You see? The first person that's only interested in one is because there's a certain emotion or a certain situation that draws them to that. You see? But a person that inherently loves learning, what's the difference what the subject is? I mean, Einstein one time wrote Freud, and he says, you're the only one that explains the neuroses, meaning that he read every single book. He was interested in everything. You understand? But the only thing is, that was not his field, but every area of life he thought through. And he read through the greats of every science to know what's going on. You see? But so there he's in every area of thought. You see? But a regular person, it's a certain situation. They don't see the importance of thought in every area. So it's dependent on the situation, which their emotions say, you should be in this area, so they get in that area. So even if they're evenly keeled and they can think correctly, it'll only be in that area. You see? So the situation dictates which areas you'll be rational in. By the Eishes Chayil, she recognizes that there is no such thing as an area that you should not be rational. Okay? And every area would be thought through. And that way she's above everybody. Even in an area where he is trained, where he trains himself to think, there are sometimes two areas which he misses up on. One is he doesn't see the importance of learning logic, because logic itself straightens the mind out. Okay? And two, sometimes he doesn't recognize the importance of the emotions and how important the emotions play a role in affecting your thinking process. So therefore, in those two ways, he also makes a mistake. So the first mistake he makes is which areas he chooses, and the second, because he doesn't have a trained mind, either because he didn't train himself in logic or he doesn't recognize the amount the emotions play a role in affecting your thinking process. So therefore, you can make many mistakes. The question is that I said that the Eishes Chayil, sometimes there's an emotion that affects the person that you just, that always happens, right? The answer is yes. I mean, you see Moshe Rabbeinu in the end of his life hit the rock instead of speaking to the rock. So there was some emotion that affected his thinking process. And he did tshuva on that and he undid it, but that was at the end of his life. And by Yaakov, it seems to be that when he went down to Egypt, that was the first time he undid his over-attachment to Yosef, and so therefore he undid it. But you're talking about Yaakov and Moshe Rabbeinu that undid it. How many people undid their emotions? I mean, there are many of our biblical heroes that didn't undo all their emotions. You understand? It's only a rarity of rarities that you undo the whole Yetzirah. But in most cases, it's going to be a person is going to always have, where even if he's an Eishes Chayil and they're totally guided by thought, they dealt with a lot of their emotions and they recognize their emotions, there's still going to be times when it's going to affect them. That's the nature of a human.
right, verse 11. I mean, verse 30, I'm sorry. Verse 30. Again, verse 30. Chen, grace is false and beauty is nothing. A woman that fears God, she should be praised. Well, she is praiseworthy. The question is I guess the first thing that we have to answer, the fear of God or fear of the Lord. That's what we have to answer first. If you go back to chapter 1, verse 7, it says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, and wisdom and musar, fools disgrace or degrade or mock. Okay? Okay, now the question is, the opposites is, you have to, it's an interesting thing that it's fear of the Lord and musar, right? So fear of the, and since there should be one subject, so musar and fear of the Lord is the same thing. And musar, we always said, is a way of life, in other words, where you make correct decisions, where you train to make correct decisions based on consequences. So therefore, fear of the Lord is where you make decisions based on consequences. That's what fear of the Lord is. Fear of the Lord is where you make decisions based on consequences. I want to say that since the opposite, see, there's always one opposite. What is the opposite? That the beginning of knowledge is the fear of God, and musar, fools, disgrace, right, or mock, right? So therefore, the opposites is the knowledge, and the fools disgrace it, right? So Yiras Hashem and Musa must be the same thing. It must be one subject. If we're talking about two different subjects, then there's no opposites here. There's no opposites. Every pasuk is opposites. So therefore, Musa is where you guide your life. The idea of Musa is to guide your life based on chachman, wisdom, that you make decisions based on the consequences of your life, right? And then therefore, fear of the Lord means where you make decisions based on the consequences, okay? Now, the question is, they say like this, the guy's asked, it says in chapter 2, verse 5, it says, then you will understand the fear of God, okay? And the knowledge of God you will find. Okay? So they wanted to say there's a beginning knowledge and an end knowledge. No, it's talking about the same thing here. But if you look at the first, the pasuk 4, verse 4, it says, if you search for it like silver and hidden stones, then you will find. In other words, it's telling you that how much energy you have to put to become an Eishes Chayil, how much energy you have to put in. To become an Eishes Chayil, that has to be the center of your life. That has to be the main part of your life, the study of Torah, study of truth. Then you will find, you will live the life of the Eishes Chayil. And the Eishes Chayil is a person that's guided through consequences and through evaluation of which is the better decision to make. There is another level. When you study God, well, that's where you study the Psalms, where there is a totally different type. There it's awe of God. Reach a point of awe, and then you're a different type of person. That is not the person that the Eishes Chayil is. The Eishes Chayil is a person that makes decisions based on evaluation of the present versus the future. The present is my emotion, and the future is the ideas, because I'm not experiencing the future now. I only know it in my mind. You see? That is the Eishes Chayil. There's another level of awe of God. You understand? And I do kindness as a result of my knowledge of God, or I do justice as a result of my knowledge of God. That's a different type of person. Okay? In other words, the Eishes Chayil is a person that makes decisions why they keep Torah, because they can evaluate the life of Torah versus other types of lives, right? Lifestyles, right? So, but once you know God,
then it's a totally different framework that you look at Torah, you look at life and the way you make decisions. Doesn't mean you won't go back to where sometimes even then you have to go back and evaluate to make a decision and think it through. You don't walk away from being an Eish Yisrael. You have to come back to being the Eish Yisrael in certain situations. But then that's a different framework. But that's not the Mishlei. Okay? So when we talk about fear of the Lord, we relate to God because we evaluate and we see that relationship to God is correct, is a better lifestyle. You understand? That's Chachma, that's wisdom, that's fear of God. Okay? At this point, when you study God himself, you study Psalms and you study the ideas of God, then it's a different personality. Okay, the question is that fear of consequences doesn't have to seem to do much with God. Okay? You have fear of consequences. The answer is whether you're going to choose God or not is going to be dependent on your evaluation. It's not going to be as a result of my study of God. It's going to be as a result of my study of the two lifestyles. When I evaluate, so my relationship to God is because his lifestyle, let's put it this way, the lifestyle of Torah is the best possible life that a person could have in the physical world. I mean, I'm not saying that you shouldn't have a proof of God, but emotionally, the proof of God will not bring you, in other words, if you have a proof of God, you have a proof of Mount Sinai, that's all you have, your emotions have not changed. You still relate, if you're a religious person, then you get the proof of God, your emotions won't change. But if you want to change your whole personality to relate to God, to have a relationship with God, that must come from Mishlei. That must come from an evaluation of the mitzvos, the benefit of the mitzvos, the benefit of the whole Torah, the benefit of the lifestyle of Torah, must come from an evaluation. And then your relationship is based on an evaluation of what is the best lifestyle. In other words, if you evaluate life in general, the particulars, you'll evaluate laziness, you'll evaluate haughtiness, and you evaluate all the different emotions. And then you start about, then at a certain point you evaluate the lifestyle of Torah, the lifestyle of Halacha, and the lifestyle of all the different aspects of Torah, and how they benefit you. So then you relate to God because you see the benefits. Or you see the consequences of not living the lifestyle of God. That's why it's fear of God, because I don't want the consequences. That's fear. Fear of God is I don't want the consequences. Again, going back to chapter 1, verse 7, it says, the beginning of knowledge is the fear of God, okay? Fear of God is because I'm afraid of the consequences of what I would get if I don't listen to God. So what is the fear of consequences? To evaluate my whole lifestyle versus the lifestyle of Torah versus other lifestyles. The lifestyle of jealousy versus not jealousy, everything we evaluate. When you're through with all this evaluation, then you become an Eish Yisrael. Then there's another type of fear that it uses in Hebrew the same word, Yiras Hashem, but it means awe of God. Through the study, through a certain approach, I don't want to get started on that, but Psalms is a different approach to God, where that leads to love of God and awe of God. Fear of God means I'm afraid of the consequences. In other words, where it says the fear of God, in our verse, that's chapter 31, verse 30, that is where she has reached the level of where she lives her life. That's called fear of God, where she lives her life totally by evaluating the lifestyle of Torah versus other lifestyles. And that's the lower level of fear. Then there's Yiras Hashem, which is, see, in Hebrew we have one thing, Yiras Hashem, but it has two different meanings. The first Yiras Hashem is fear of God. That's the result of Mishlei. The second Yiras Hashem is the result of the knowledge of God himself. That's through the Psalms. Also, the question is on this pasuk. The first half is just saying it's false or nothing. And in the second half, it says she should be praised. The opposite should be, the second half should be she should be praised, and the first should be she should be disgraced. Right? Well, if it says the first half false and nothing, then the second half should say this is the truth. So, what are these opposites? They're not opposites. They're two different things. Okay, we have to answer that. And we have to also explain the word chen. Chen means grace. And in certain places in Mishlei, grace is a compliment. Over here, grace seems to be a degradation. Right? So, the question is what's the difference of the grace? Right? So, what we want to say, we can't say all grace is bad. In other words, there's some good type of grace, and there's some type of grace that is good. Okay? So you have, what did I say, good and good? All right. There's some type of grace that is good, and there's some type of grace that is bad. And the first step is that we have to define grace. Okay? Grace is something with which attracts others to the person that has grace. Okay? Grace is the quality which attracts others to the person that has this grace. In other words, I'm saying that the definition of grace is where other people are attracted to you. But I'm saying the cause of that attraction, there are two causes which are different. There are two causes which are different, and that's what we're trying to define, the two causes, how they are different. The definition has to be in terms of the type of chen. In other words, they have something, a quality, which attracts others. What turns a person off? Let's say, for instance, you see a stingy person. It just turns people off. You know, a person that's very haughty, brags. Ragged, turns people off. The Eisha Shchayil attracts people by virtue that she removed her negative qualities. Okay? She doesn't have negative qualities, so they're drawn to her. They don't feel competition. They don't feel a put down. They don't feel that bad, right? That's one type of chay. It draws people to you. They don't have the negative. The other type is a certain personality, like he has a good sense of humor. He knows what to say at the correct time. So his desire is to attract people based on the way he relates to people. He draws people to him based on his personality. He could be a con artist, and people like him. They're drawn to him. People have given up their lives for these people because they know exactly how to speak to the emotions. And they draw you to them because they want to draw you to them, and they use their personality to draw you. The Eisha Shchayil is not interested in drawing you. The Eisha Shchayil just doesn't try to reach out to win over people. She just has no negative qualities, so her chayin is because of her nature, they're drawn to her. So one chayin, one grace is a very good type of grace, the other type of grace is false. The whole thing is a lie. And that's why it says, and beauty, because grace is a personality. Certain people are drawn to physical beauty, so beauty is physical, and grace is a personality. The Eisha Shchayil doesn't rely on either one of those two. She just removes the negative traits. So natural. So her desire is to remove negative traits because she sees that's bad. But when she removes it, people are drawn to her. The question is, why is it called force? It should be called harm, consequences, right? Why is it called false? Because King Solomon holds that if you have either contradiction or you have consequences, that shows that it's not in line with the reality of a human being. If there are consequences or there are contradictions in that lifestyle, then that shows that it is not in line with reality. That makes it false. That's the way you evaluate what is false and what is not false, in the world of making decisions. Now, the answer to the other question of they're not opposites. So the thing is when we say praise, we don't say that people are going to praise her. She is praiseworthy. In other words, we're saying that's the nature of that King Solomon holds, that which is praiseworthy is that whose nature is to be in line with the book of Mishlei. But if you draw people, in other words, but if you draw people because you desire to have people attached to you, that is not in line with reality. That will lead to consequences, contradictions. But however, the person that's totally guided by fear of God, that's in line with reality. Because they evaluate every single thing. And once they evaluate it, they see which one is the better. That is the reality which they should live by. That becomes truth in this area. In other words, it's sort of, I think Yaakov is right, it's sort of a summary of the whole book. In other words, anything that is not in line with, in other words, where you didn't evaluate the value of certain things and you're just drawn to them, that is falseness. That is a false life. That's a life of nothing. Because you will get consequences and you will pay the consequences. And the consequences show that proves that it's not the life of truth. The life of truth only comes about through an evaluation, and King Solomon is saying one is false and the only truth is where you evaluate the two things and you come to a true conclusion of the correct evaluation. That is the only lifestyle that is praiseworthy. Well, we want to say about false and nothingness, you know, there is a contradiction, okay? Definition of a contradiction, it shows that something is not true. You see? When you have a contradiction, it shows that the object which you're talking about is nothing, doesn't exist. You see? Like, for instance, a square circle. Square circle, the fact that it's impossible to have one, that shows that it cannot exist. So by falsehood and nothingness, it's really two sides of the same coin. When you see a contradiction, or you see the bad consequences, that makes it a nothing. That makes it nothing insofar as the life of the human being. That thing is a nothing. It's not real. The only reality, the only thing that is praiseworthy, is where a person lives his life based on evaluation, where he evaluates every decision that he makes. He evaluates the pros and the cons in every decision that he makes. That's the very lifestyle that he lives. That is the only value that there is in this life, according to King Solomon. That's what it means, praiseworthy. In other words, the question is that shows that it's only a means towards the correct life. Yeah, but when you are guided this way, that means it shows your nature that you're guided by truth and not by falsehood. In other words, the opposite is also true, because we have the other side of pasuk, of falseness and nothingness. So therefore, your nature is that you're living in line with reality and not in line with falseness and nothingness. So it's not only that it's a practical thing that because of the results that you will be more successful, but it's also inherently in your nature that you're in line with reality. In other words, it is true that reality is the best path for man, but it shows that when you make a decision as a chacham, as a wise person, it shows that your nature is in line with reality too. It shows both. In other words, you recognize the value of living a correct life, but it also shows that you're in line with reality and not in line with falsehood. In other words, what starts you out, what starts out is that I could show you that this is the best life. But then as you study this, as it becomes second nature, you start recognizing that this is the only way of knowing reality. What in any decision
The only way to know reality is to evaluate, and then you recognize you're in line with reality.
Hey, chapter 2, verse 1. It says, "My son, if you take my words and my and my commandments you hide within you." Okay? So the Malbim wants to make a distinction between my words and my commandment. He says, I think if I remember correctly, it says that he starts out with that it's advice. Like it's a good lifestyle, right? But then when it becomes second nature, it becomes a command. You understand? Becomes a command. In other words, I have no choice. I must live the life of reality. That's the change in your personality. You start out, when you start evaluating, you say, hey, I want the good life. I want success. So I start evaluating it. But sometimes I don't. Okay, look, it's a nice idea, but today I don't feel like doing it. You see, it's like advice. Advice means, well, I could take the advice or not take the advice. That's up to me. But then after a while, this type of lifestyle becomes a command. It means I have no choice. It's truth. This I must live. It becomes like a command that I must live this lifestyle. Now the question is it because of truth, or is it because of the success of my lifestyle? That's my question. In other words, I can't tell you what motivates at this point, okay? All I can tell you is that you will have both. You will have success, and your nature is to start searching. I think there's a certain point where you're guided by, because you know the only way to find truth is through evaluation. I mean, that's the Eish HaChayil. There's another way of knowing truth, that's something else. That's why I said it's a further development. But however, at this point, the only way of knowing truth is through living the life of Mishnah. First you do it for the practical, you understand? And then it becomes a command. What does it mean, a command? I must live this lifestyle. There's no other lifestyle to live. This is my reality. In other words, we're saying that at a certain point, there are two things about Mishlei. One is that I will get a good life, and two is this becomes my reality. Okay? Now the question, which one will motivate the person? Now I understand when you start out, it's because of the practical. You understand? But truth itself is a big draw to the human being. His soul looks for truth. He must work through his emotions and work through his training. But truth itself becomes a draw to the human being. And I think that the motive, at a certain point, by the Eish HaChayil, is drawn because of the truth. Is drawn because of the truth. For its own sake. Because, in other words, there's a certain point where you have both qualities. The question is which one motivates the person. There's a practical and truth. I think truth, the search for truth, becomes stronger than the practical. In the eyes of a person that sees it as truth, that idea is a stronger drive than the practical. They must live the practical. They have no choice. But what motivates them, since they have two qualities, the question is which quality draws them. I say a search for truth is a much more powerful drive than the practical. Not evaluating what's the higher level. I'm just saying that I think the stronger draw to a person is the truth over the practical. Now when you start out, so you don't know the truth, so there's something else that has to draw you. So you need the practical to draw you. You see? But once you see that this evaluation makes it the truth, you see, I think truth is a stronger pull than the practical. Now Matt asked the question, what's my proof for this? I don't have a proof. I leave the proof for the people that listen to this tape. Thank you. And when you get a proof, please call me. I do think it's the same type of thing. Like if you're a person, certain people learn halacha because they have to know how to live life according to halacha, according to Jewish law. But there's some people that get involved in the study of halacha that they're drawn just to the study, and the ideas itself draw them. And I think that draw is a greater draw. And I think that's the same with Mishlei. The question is how could you commit your life to Torah? There's a lot of practical parts to life, right? There's a lot of practical. I mean, you have to take care of, let's say, for instance, take a most difficult case. A person is married, has a family, has to make a living. How's he going to commit himself to learning of Torah? Okay? So the first thing is that what draws him is some emotion. It's not the truth itself that draws him. Okay? So for some emotion, he has his family, and he has which is one emotion. Then he has an emotion to learn Torah, whether it's religious emotion or he sees benefits in it. Whatever the emotion is, it draws him. Okay? But then when he sees the truth and he's drawn to the truth, and I think the truth is a more powerful draw, he will try to lower his standard of living and try to the best. He can't give up his responsibility, that it would be unjust. Has a family, or if it's the woman, then she has a family, she has certain, he or she has responsibility. But their framework starts changing in the way they make decisions, in the way they think, in the way they study, and the way they have priorities, they choose their priorities, and how much energy to put into one thing over another, and which priorities come first, and which I could give up, you see, it changes the way they look at life. Not always the commitment doesn't mean that I'm going to cloister myself and move in to a yeshiva and close my life off for more practicality. You can't do that. Maybe for a certain amount of years you can. You know, like the Yaakov, before he went to Lavan, Rashi says that he spent 14 years in the yeshiva of Shem Ve'eha. Okay? So he spent 14 years, day and night. He learned. So like in your situation, that's what you should do. You should put a certain amount of years where you put every ounce of energy into learning. But then you have to take care of practical. You got to go to college. You have to go, whatever you have to do to make a living. And then you got to get married. You have to take responsibility to your family. Okay? So the thing is that the commitment is to the lifestyle of Chachma. And your priorities, how much energy to put into the learning, and how much energy you should put into justice, and how much energy you should put into practicality. That's because of your new framework. You might have different ways of evaluating it and working it out in different ways so that you'll have more time for learning, and the way you make decisions will be also based on these ideas. So the commitment should not come from some crazy emotion that I want to work very hard. The commitment comes from the learning itself. When you see the practical value, so you become more committed to it, and then when you see the idea of truth, you're drawn to the very truth itself, and that makes you more committed to the lifestyle. But it doesn't mean you're going to give up all your responsibilities. That would be stupid. That would not be the Aishas file. Okay. We're up to verse 31, and it says, give to her from the fruits of her hand, and praise her in the gates, her works, or her actions. In other words, praise, I guess you have to explain it as praise her in the gates through her actions. Okay? By gates, they usually mean where the government was run, where people gathered together. Okay, in other words, like publicly praise her actions. It says, give to her from the fruits of her hand, so she should already have she already should have the fruits of her hand. Okay? And then the second half, we praise her in the gates through her actions. By praising her actions. So we're saying the first step is to give her from the fruits of her hands means give. In other words, she is satisfied if you give to her only from the fruits of her hands. That's all she needs. She doesn't need more than the fruits of her hands. And that's what the second half of the pasuk seems to be also saying, and praise her in the gates through her actions. Okay? In other words, all she needs is the fruits of her hands. Okay? I think it means something like this. In religion, most religions are passive. In other words, I rely on God. So if I'm in a problem, I turn to God. In Judaism, we hold that you have to be active. You have to be, the first step is to do everything that you can. In other words, if you remember by Yaakov, it gives us the formula. Yaakov, when he met Esav, so Rashi says that the first thing, he sent the peace treaty. The second thing, he divided the camp, he was preparing for war. Says then he says he prayed that one of the first two ways should work. You see? But he didn't, he only relied on God after he did everything he can. He had to be, in other words, the philosophy of Judaism is that Mishle must come first. You must do everything you can within the physical world. That is what you must do. It's only after you can't do anymore, then you turn to God. Now, of course, when you turn to God and when Yaakov turns to God, it's two different worlds. You might have to turn to God earlier because you don't know everything. So fine, so then you have to turn to God. Like, for instance, the question is like this. In Shemona Esrei, in the standing prayer, it says that we ask God for wisdom, one of the blessings. Right? We ask God for wisdom, right? So the question is, but that's free will. You can't, God does not affect your free will. God will not affect your free will, so how could you ask for wisdom? You see? You could pray to God for the wisdom that's beyond you, that you could pray for him. You could, in other words, what's in my free will, that God is not going to be help me. But what's out of my free will to go beyond what's, or to bring out a circumstance to help me learn better, find a situation to learn better. You see what I mean? So therefore, when it's out of my hands, that's when I turn to God. But the first step is to do everything in my means, in every possible way. I must do it on my own. You see? That is what Mishle is teaching us. That's really what the book of Mishle is all about. That's really the last pasuk of Mishle. Right? That's what the whole Mishle is about. That you must, it doesn't mean that you will always be successful. There's sometimes things that you're out of your hands. That's a further development of our religion, that's when you turn to God. But this is what you must do before you turn to God. That's all. You know that you must do, and you're satisfied. That's your satisfaction, that everything is done by myself. I'm not a dependent person. I'm independent, except in the world where I can't go anymore, then I turn to God. It's a different type of dependence than you, regular religion. You see what I mean? Now, just clarification. In other words, if you accept the first step, that the pasuk is saying, she is satisfied if you give to her just the fruits of her hand. That's all she wants. In other words, she doesn't want anything out of except what she worked for. That's all. This summarizing everything that she is, the last good sukkah. This is what satisfies her. Most people, they dream about somebody is going to, a wealthy family person that they don't even know died and leave $1 million, or they'll win the lottery. She doesn't have these fantasies. She doesn't wish that somebody's going to drop something. That's not in her realm. She just lives by the work of her hands. That satisfies her. So therefore I'm saying, but I have the question, if that's the only thing that satisfies her, where's God fit in? Well, don't we turn to God? That we have a religion. That we have to turn to God. So if that's what Mishle is all about, where's God? So I'm saying that only after you live the life of Mishle, then you rely on God. But this is summarizing what the book of Mishle is. Mishle is teaching you what we said about Yaakov, that the first two steps, the first he sent the peace treaty and tried to appease Esav, and then he divided the camp, he prepared for war. That was Mishle. It was only after that he turns to God, but he did everything on his own. The same thing is planned with with getting the sheep from Laban. He had a whole plan there. Everything he worked out on his own. It was only beyond that he turned to God. But he did everything on his own. The same, if you look at all the mean, everybody except in particular cases. God sent like Eliyahu on a mission. The whole thing was bound with miracles, because that was, he was on a mission of God. That was a separate thing. That's already dealing with the relationship with God. But you must do everything you can to the best of your ability and work out a plan. And you, whatever your situation is, you work out a plan and you carry through the plan, and no matter what it takes, to the best of your ability, depending on your emotions, depending on your situation, to the best of your ability, you work out a plan and you do it, and you're happy. You're happy that you just get what you put in. You're not waiting for any miracle to come about for you. Okay? In other words, there are two satisfactions to the Eishes Chayil. One satisfaction is that she worked everything out and she just gets whatever she did. And two is, there's a certain satisfaction of living in reality, living in a world of truth, that she's drawn to the truth. So there's two satisfactions. Okay? But here it says, but here the idea is dealing with the second aspect, or the first aspect, namely, practically, that's all she wants out of the physical world. She's not looking for fantasies, for miracles. She just wants to work everything out and get what the result of her own plans and strategies of how to bring about her life and how she sets up her life. That is what would satisfy. That's one aspect. In other words, and then if it fails because of outside causes, she is happy because of her, of who she is, that she lived by the world of ideas, and she accepts reality that there's an outside factor. Once you recognize that there's things outside yourself, that is also reality. And she, if she is a person that accepts reality, which that's what we're saying to Eishes Chayil is, so it fails not because of her. If it fails because of her, then she has to have a strategy of how to straighten her life out, that she shouldn't make this mistake again. So she'll work on it herself, you see? Or with advice, she'll go for advice. If she doesn't have the knowledge, she'll go to somebody that has the knowledge and she'll get the advice. But she'll get it on her own. But once it's out of her hands, then she accepts reality for what it is. In other words, we're saying that 31 is also a summary of the total picture of the Eishes Chayil, that is exactly what satisfies her. That she worked it out on her own, and she's satisfied with that quality. She's satisfied that everything she did through her own hand, that she worked it out, not by chance. In other words, a lot of people wait for chance. Maybe this situation, that situation, the lottery. This person will give me, I'll do it. That person will help me. That person, they don't have an inner working, an inner plan. They have to have their own plan. Okay? That's the Eishes Chayil.